You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino.
And the Seattle Mariners are not selling; they are, in fact, buying. Is next Tuesday's trade deadline approaches, making a pair of trades over the past 24 hours. On Thursday night, it was Tampa Bay outfielder Randy Arozarena coming over to the Mariners for a couple of prospects, a pair of 2023 draftees, and a player to be named later. And then on Friday, reliever Yimi Garcia from the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for outfielder Jonathan Clase and a minor league catcher. Tristan, how are you feeling about these moves?
I'm feeling great. First off, have we ever done a Mariners transact emergency pod?
I don't think we technically did an emergency pod for the Luis Castillo trade because I believe it happened when we were in Salem.
And I don't know if either of us cared that much. No, we cared.
We cared a lot.
Okay.
I mean, I remember I was watching his debut against the Yankees, right?
Yes. Yeah. He made his debut. That was when we were in
Salem. On our drive back.
Yeah. I'm feeling great about this so far. I mean, as great as you could feel about anything that the Mariners do. Honestly, I'm more interested in hearing your perspective, because to me, hear what you have to say first so I can argue with you about it.
A lot of the logic for why I wanted the Mariners to sell is because I have no faith in the 2024 Seattle Mariners, particularly without two of, on paper, their three best offensive players or position players in J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez for at least the next week. On Julio, the timeline on J.P. Crawford is longer even, I think, than I anticipated. It would be 4 to 6 weeks with that fracture, the non-displaced fracture in his pinky after being hit by a pitch, and their playoff odds dipping to about 30% on Fangraphs after they were swept at home by the Los Angeles Angels. So to go 5-1-5 on this homestand coming out of the All-Star break, and 1-8 now in their last 9 in games. Is that correct? Dating back to the final three.
The 6 straight losses to the Angels aren't great.
Oh, no, they're not great at all. So to me, again, the priority, I was on to 2025. And the good news about the Arozarena trade is this is a trade that undoubtedly helps the Mariners for 2025 in 2026 when he's exactly under team control. And this was, you know, what I was envisioning is part potentially of a two-pronged strategy, along with, you know, hypothetically trading Luis
Castillo.
There's
a reality. We have not reached the trade deadline yet. I think it is extraordinarily unlikely that the Mariners will be considered the quote-unquote sellers.
Well, the fact that they traded for Garcia, whose first name is apparently pronounced Jimmy. Which is surprising, but that's the indicator, not the Arozarena trade, because Garcia is a classic trade deadline pickup player in the last year of his contract on a team that is somewhat out of the playoff race. Is the Rays are as well, of course. They're selling at the moment. They also traded one of their starters on Friday, and you know, there's no benefit to the Mariners of having a 33-year-old reliever who's going to be a free agent at the end of the season in 2025 or 2026. This is purely a win-now move. And at the price, that's probably fine. Arozarena, I feel positive about, because I think the price was lower than I would have expected when I first heard the price of this trade. Neither of the players that they gave up, you know, pending some sort of extreme player to be named later situation, is a top 10 prospect.
I will tell you that the our baseball Reddit was like, it must be one of these amazing players. And I was just like, dog, like, I'm just going to be honest with you, it's not.
I mean, so you remember, like, John Halama was a pretty decent player when the Mariners got him as the player to be named later in the Randy Johnson trade. And as I recall, that had something to do with like 40-man roster spots and things like that, that they saved that until after the season. And there's also some situations where it could be like contingent on, you know, maybe if the Mariners make the playoffs, the Rays get a better player to be named later out of a pre-selected list than they get if the Mariners don't make the playoffs. Who knows?
But right now, we should focus on those two prospects. And when I think about Arozarena, similar to all the players we talked about previously, Jazz Chisholm, Vlad Guerrero, Luis Robert, those types of players, doing the research on them, they're all relatively all relatively young. Rosarina is a little bit older.
I wouldn't describe
one.
As young.
I had a Hot Ones Hot
Team
Pocket
Control
before this. Have you ever watched Hot Ones before?
I am familiar
similar
with Hot
to
Ones.
Similar to our horror movie discussion, have you ever had a food that could be considered spicy? Now,
I've done the pepper challenge, ALS pepper challenge, on this very podcast,
okay, fine,
friend.
Fine. So that one time, I said foods.
You asked for the Mariners to score runs, not run. Your wish was not granted.
Anyway, for those players, those types of players, not just about a single season, and that's what excited me about them. It's about the Mariners needing to transform their offensive roster, pretty much completely overhauling it, and not just in a situation where they're going to be able to go out in free agency, just looking at the upcoming free agents. It's not something that's going to happen this offseason. This is the window right now for the Mariners to set up their 2025 and 2026 rosters. There are moves that can happen. There are trades that can happen next year. But the urgency in the moment for those trade partners, like the Rays, like the White Sox, like the Marlins, is more pressing in this moment. And similar to what
part of
the
reason for that urgency is because they're assuming that the other teams are paying for the value of having those players.
But
in the 2024 stretch run and postseason.
If this deal gets done in the offseason, are you like, I'm not sure about that? Or you feel exactly the same way about a Rosarena?
I feel exactly the same way about a Rosarena.
It is a solid deal. Like you could,
look
at it and
I have
almost
no qualms about it.
No way and approach it as the Mariners overpaid for Randy Rosarena because of the pressure. Maybe on Garcia, but that one to me is like, I want to talk about that later because I want to focus solely and first on Randy Rosarena, because I also don't think the Mariners are done. And there is a reality that they find themselves one game back at the trade deadline. Take out all of the other information. They are one game back in the AL West at the trade deadline. And they're a team that missed the playoffs by a single game last season. John Stanton is aware of this information. The Mariners front office is aware of this information. And most importantly, the people who are aware of this information are fans and the people who have to sell them tickets. John Stanton, I didn't see him in Diamond Club when I was there last week in the Angels game. He only showed his face earlier in the year when they were up about 10 games. But
things were going much better.
He is very aware of how many people bought seats for those games. And we talked about this previously. Baseball, more than almost any other sport, is about ticket selling during the season. And right now, the Mariners still have games to sell over these next couple of months. And beyond that, they have an offseason of tickets to sell. And if they try, say they don't make it, but they tried on their way in and they're like, we have Randy Rosarena going into next year with a healthy Julio, with a healthy J.P. Crawford, the excitement is going to be significantly higher around this Mariners team. If they quote-unquote sell like you're talking about, the excitement is dead. Like this
I don't necessarily buy that because the point of selling was it's part one of a two-step process.
That you
sell and then spend that money that you've saved. Sell Luis Castillo and spend the money that you've saved hitting.
The season ticket renewals happened before that.
That is true. I don't think that season ticket renewals are as important in baseball as they are other sports.
But they matter.
The inverse of them.
These things matter, and they know what the numbers looked like when they made the playoffs a couple of years ago, and they know what the numbers look like when they didn't make the playoffs. And how they approached the trade deadline last year was different than how they have this year, which obviously they were further out from the playoffs at this point a year ago than they are right now. I understand that there's more to it than just being a game out because the wild card is less of a possibility than it may have been otherwise, or most teams who are a game out. But realistically speaking, the Mariners have a chance to make the playoffs. They have the pitching staff. They just need to score slightly more runs. They haven't been getting blown out in almost any of these games. When you look at those Angels games, they're not particularly lopsided. So,
yeah, I mean, their run differential has stayed mediocre the entire season. Their record has fluctuated wildly. The run differential has been basically the same.
So I don't think that the Mariners' problems are solved by Randy Rosarena, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. Their PR problems are at least slightly solved by Randy Rosarena. And I can tell you somebody who's excited about Randy Rosarena being in that clubhouse, and that's Julio Rodriguez. That is the rest of the roster. And this Mariners roster is excited about having him there. He's a player who seems very liked throughout baseball. He's a player who's very liked by fans. For me, as in the World Baseball Classic, seeing so much of Randy Arozarena, I was like, I love him. He's like, if you were to ask me of my favorite players outside of the Mariners, it's like he's in the top 10 or whatever. Also, top 10 of players I can name outside of the Mariners.
He was definitely in the top 10 earliest I could name them players who, you know, were not stars back when I was paying attention a long time ago.
So
the 2020 those playoff run was very memorable.
Those things matter also. But when you're looking at this beyond that, with the two extra years for Randy Arozarena as he's going to arbitration, his salary is going to be determined by his play, which is, it's maybe not the greatest thing for the players overall, but it is a very solid thing for the team. And that's sweet, sweet team control, because they've got 2 years of it beyond this. He is somebody who they could probably turn around, assuming things go average to above average, if they needed to, and flip Randy Arozarena for probably similar prospects in the future. And wait, what was my last point here?
Oh, no, I lost my train of thought.
And I don't think the Mariners are done. And I think that we obviously can't discuss this overall, but I think this is an indication. They haven't traded anybody who's in the, say, top 10 prospects in the Mariners organization, even in the back half of that. I don't know if they will necessarily, but if they're in this moment where they're like, fuck it, we're going for it, and there's other prospects in that back half of the top 10, they're not trading the players near the very top who they're counting on being major leaguers. This is the beginning of the trade deadline season right now. They have 5 days to do something else. This White Sox series probably matters also. Every single game matters right now and how it plays out. But the Mariners are showing that they're trying this season to make the playoffs. And as we've discussed, all you can really do in baseball is make the playoffs, because it's not a situation like basketball where if you're the 8 seed, if you're the Chicago Bulls and you're going all in to make the play-in or something like that, right? If you're doing those things, even if you get there, you're going to get crushed by one of these teams before then. That's not the situation in baseball. They just have to get in. They still have the pitching staff. So anything can happen at that point.
I do think it is important to fold in the conversation we've been having on the Discord this morning. I don't know if you caught any of this about T-Mobile Park's effect on strikeouts and the ESPN trade grade for the Arozarena trade, which they graded a B for both sides. Obviously, I fully endorse B for both sides. Love that. They mentioned that opponents are hitting 202 against the Mariners at T-Mobile Park. So I had been thinking for a while, I wanted to go double check the pitching splits home and away. And I was kind of blown away by the pitching splits, particularly the strikeout to walk ratio stood out is what I posted about. The Mariners currently have a strikeout to walk ratio at home of 4.71. No team since the 19th century has been better than 4 in that category in a full season. On the road, the Mariners are below average in terms of strikeout to walk rate.
So are you saying that this pitching staff isn't actually good?
I'm saying the pitching staff is good, but it's not as historically good as people think it is, because they're not, as much as they are not park adjusting, the hitters aren't as terrible as they look. They're also not, like, even people who make that park adjustment are probably not doing the reverse of it. Like, guys, if T-Mobile Park is destroying the Mariners hitters, it's probably also helping the Mariners pitchers look better than they are. And it's why when they go on these road trips, they start to score more runs, but still often lose those games.
What does that change with regards to Randy Arozarena, though, or trying to score an offense? It doesn't change anything. They're equal.
No.
Right?
No,
it's just the water level rising and shrinking. You know,
it's just like this idea that, like, people always want to have is, like, whatever is going well, that's the real thing. And whatever is going poorly, that's a
Seahawks
fluke,
offense.
And that's going to
the Seahawks
to
offense is going to be exactly the same. Mike McDonald's going to fix the defense. Super team!
I love the callback to this week's pod. Yes, that's all I'm saying is I don't know that it's like Mariners pitching staff plus playoffs equals World Series. But they probably won't allow very many runs. I don't know if you recall the last time they played a playoff game in like the late months when it's really cold in T-Mobile Park.
You remember the last time they played a playoff game?
No, I'm not saying
that's what I'm talking about.
A playoff game. Again, if they make the playoffs, I'll be thrilled.
They could have won any of those games in the Astros series. It was. And that's the team that ended up going on to win the World Series.
Of course. Again, just get there. Note that how many fucking runs were scored at Minute Maid Park. Is it still Minute Maid Park in Houston? A lot of runs. No runs whatsoever scored for 17 innings at T-Mobile Park.
That doesn't change things with regard to having a good roster.
Because if you're trying
to have a good roster, you want to have a good roster because they perform both at home.
I agree. Again, I like the Randy Arozarena trade. I do think I'm a little scared by this. Well, the Mariners could go out and make another move because, like, yeah, the fact that you got pretty good value for Rosarena doesn't mean that you should therefore go turn around and overpay for Vlad Guerrero Jr. or something like that.
I don't think they have it in their nature necessarily to do that.
I hope that's the case.
I think that's why they haven't traded for a player like that, which is probably a positive. But the fact that they have done these things, adding a little bit of salary, going out and trading some prospects for bats, the fact that they have done these things shows me that they have a bit of a mandate from ownership down to get better and to try to win this season. And there are other opportunities. I'm not saying that they're going to overpay for these players, but there are other opportunities out there. I think Arozarena and Jazz Chisholm, to me, feel like in a very similar place. Neither of them are having amazing seasons overall. And we could talk about Randy Arozarena specifically. They are both having pretty solid seasons. And if they were on the Mariners, they would be one of the best players on the team.
Without question. I believe Arozarena does have the best ops on the team. Now, again, we've got to do that ballpark accounting before we get too strongly into that.
But so relative to the Mariners roster, each of them is having a very good season. Relative to maybe the peak of Randy Arozarena or Jazz Chisholm, not necessarily. But that's not what the Mariners...
so hard for you to say.
That's not necessarily what the Mariners need right now. They don't need one amazing player. They need a couple of pretty good players.
The problem is they might need like four or five pretty good players. But certainly if they upgrade it... And the one thing about making these trades is...
There's still a game back right now.
Now that your roster includes Arozarena, it is more sensible than to make another win-now trade. I will concede that because now the marginal benefit of that is higher than if your roster was less good.
And because you've kind of set yourself here a little bit of a 2-year window with Arozarena.
3-year window.
You have, including this season.
So Arozarena peaked at 3.9 war in 2021 when he won AL Rookie of the Year, had 3.5 in 2023 when he made what is to date his lone All-Star appearance, got off to a really slow start this season, which is why his numbers are not the same as they were across last year. In April, the batting average and balls in play luck was pretty horrendous earlier in the season when he was hitting 143 in April and in the March portion, 178 in May. But his batting average on balls in play was 178 in April/March, 196 in May. It's come back to 333 in June, 313 in July, and he's been around a 900 OPS both of those 2 months, which is even probably a little better than I think you would expect from him going forward.
And
his career batting average
really
in play is 317.
Compared to Mariners.
Again, he's going to have to play half his games at T-Mobile Park, which he has not had to do. And you look at strikeout rate, solidly better than the Mariners' current roster. That'll, again, obviously go up at T-Mobile Park, where the strikeout rate seems to be now one of the defining features of the ballpark and one that is not explained by the marine layer or the layout of left field. Like something else is going on there, which we can get on into at a later date. But and as you mentioned, again, Randy Arozarena is a fun player. And the Mariners keep playing these other teams and you're like, wow, they're not very good, but they've got a lot of fun players on them. And so it's nice to have some of those fun players.
I don't know if
the
Angels
Mariners
count as one of those teams, but
no, I was talking about like the Marlins when they played them for that series. Probably the Rays.
Well, maybe they will have one of those players. The Rays have obviously been fun for a long time.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm feeling great about that because, again, they've also set themselves a little bit of a window. If they do make another trade, one of those players that we're kind of talking about will be in a similar timeline contract-wise as well as Arozarena. Obviously, Julio is tied up for longer, but there's kind of Julio. If Julio's career is the timeline for the Mariners, there are different windows within that. In the same way that Ken Griffey Jr. years ago, there were different
Julio's
windows
career
within.
Isn't the timeline for the Mariners anymore. He's not been good enough this season. The starting pitching is the timeline.
Not the timeline. Is the starting pitching good enough, though?
And now that's the case for a win now move and for focusing on 2024, despite everything that's gone wrong, is knock on wood, the pitching is healthy.
Wow, updated Julio, not the timeline.
Look, we're constantly evaluating timelines.
I still think Julio overall is probably the timeline, but does it
concern you at all to trade with the Rays?
No, not at all. We like Luke Rayleigh.
I know, that's the thing. But the Rays have such a reputation for winning these trades, including the one where they got a Rosarena. Smith and Hopkins, 2023 first draft picks by the Mariners. Smith in the fourth round, Hopkins in the sixth round, and still very far away from the major leagues, both of them.
When I think that piece about, especially with starting pitching, injury is going to be a risk for starting pitching basically forever, right? Like, it's not something that you want to count on, and you want to have as much starting pitching as possible because that's the case. But at the same time, any individual starting pitcher, if it's not Paul Skeens or somebody like that, I would be very skeptical about. I would want a minor leagues that is full of hitters and full, especially on the high end, and just a lot of pitchers overall, because starting pitching can end up being relatively replaceable because of that. The other piece, if you look at major league, I don't know, is there a stat for this specifically? Value over contract? So basically like net value relative to your contract.
I'm sure that exists somewhere. I don't know where to find it in the span of this podcast.
If you were, that's basically like Randy Arozarena is almost certainly going to be a better player in the majors than either of these prospects that they traded. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, obviously.
And so the piece that you need to look at is throughout the duration of Randy Arozarena's contract, these two and a, I'll call it a half, but a little bit less than a half years, these two years during this time period, is Randy Arozarena's value over his contract going to be greater than, or do you feel confident that it's going to be greater than these two prospects that they traded? And I think that's a pretty fair thing to say. Now, at the same time, you also need to, having value right now in the moment and being good on a major league level is an important piece as well. And it's a hard piece to find, which is young-ish major league hitting that is team controlled. Like Randy Arozarena is not an easy player to go out and find. And I think that's why this trade is especially good for the Mariners. It's those two extra seasons. It's his still relatively young age. And it's that this is the type of player that a lot of teams are looking for. And they didn't have to trade anybody, any top 10 prospect for him. You're talking about a fourth round pick and a sixth round pick. It's nice, but it's not the end of the world overall. These are not necessarily players that you would count on being everyday players on your team. It's obviously a crapshoot with a lot of prospects. So much can happen during this next time period, the next 3-4 years. But any one of them individually, if they end up being a star or even an everyday Major League Baseball player, that is still them exceeding their expectations. And congrats to the Rays if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, look, you're always taking a risk when you trade away prospects, but it's not like
you're taking a risk when you trade anything. When you make a trade, you are taking a risk.
Yeah. And like it's probably an asymmetrical risk because Rosarena, there's only like so much better he can be relative to his contract over the next 2+ years. Whereas one of these prospects over the 7 years or whatever it is a team control could have an amazing amount of value, but the odds are that they will probably not have very much value at all.
And I think that piece to me is why it also could make sense to go out and make a trade for somebody else. If the Mariners were to make a trade for a player, go all in-ish for this season where they're a game out, it still feels like I don't approach this as the AL West is out of reach like you do.
It's expectations management, admittedly.
The value of any playoff appearance for the Mariners, who have had two in the last 24 years, the value of any playoff appearance is overwhelming versus anything else. And that's something that I think kind of has to be factored in here. Anytime that they go, both financially to the team overall and to the city and the fan base, a playoff appearance, even if it's in the play-in round, is still an important moment.
It's going to be in the play-in round.
For the Mariners overall. There's a lot of time. I think you're not understanding. The Mariners were 10 games up not that long ago. I mean, you've seen the Yankees fall as well. This is the Pelton Cast Golden Rule, isn't it?
The Peltonghast's golden rule isn't things are aren't predictable. The Peltonghast's golden rule is people can't predict how they're going to feel about things before they happen.
How about this?
You can't predict how you're going to feel about the Mariners making these trades and just not making the playoffs.
I might be mad about it, but that's fine because at least they tried. And at least we'll have a fun Randy Arozarena for a period of time.
True.
Okay. What about Jimmy Garcia?
The odds of clinching the buy on Fangraphs are 2.5%.
I'm just saying this is not a Peltonghast golden rule, but the baseball season is very long.
Oh,
there's still a lot of baseball left.
You know what? It's almost as long as
how long? The soccer season?
Yeah, the MLS season.
MLS season.
Almost, not quite. Jimmy Garcia, a veteran, made his major league debut in 2014, missed one season due to injury entirely, but it's his 10th major league campaign. The Mariners will now be his fifth team. He was a deadline pickup by the Astros in 2021. That didn't go super great, but you know, obviously a very small sample size, a lot of volatility with relievers in that period of time, showcasing the volatility of relievers. Garcia has basically alternated between below replacement play and like solid, you know, near one war seasons as a reliever. He's, you know, probably not quite good enough to be your primary setup guy, but I think he basically steps in the role that Ryan Stanek has not been very effective in
lately.
I
was going to say, I think he probably is their primary setup guy. I mean, I guess if we assume that player is Stanek, but like,
well, hopefully it's Gregory Santos, so it sounds like the knee injury that caused him to leave the game. That was part of the bad vibes.
Yeah, that didn't help.
Just go great. The knee injury that caused him to leave the game is not serious. Adam G had just reported on Twitter. He'll be with the team in Chicago and perhaps have a chance to pitch as soon as tomorrow.
Revenge game.
Yes.
Ryan Stanek at this point, watching him pitch, he just does not feel like a major league pitcher. I'm not convinced that Ryan Stanek will be on the major league ball club in 10 days.
I mean, they have to clear a roster spot. Are we convinced he's going to be on the major league roster tomorrow? He probably will be, but I'm not convinced.
I thought the funny piece of it with people citing the like, so this is one that I actually feel a little bit worse about overall, which is basically anytime you're trading for relief pitching for a half year, there's a little bit of like, what are we doing here? You know, I understand the value at this point of the season. Relief pitching is important. It's something that the Mariners have not had to do in a very long time. You know, this harkens back to like 1998, right? This is like Mike Timlin, Jose Mesa days.
I mean, it was 97 was the worst of it.
Who was the pitcher from Boston?
Not Heathcliff Slocum.
Heathcliff Slocum. There was another one too, a white dude.
From Boston?
Maybe not from Boston. Anyway,
you're thinking of Paul Spoljarek?
Paul Spoljarek. Yes, that's who I was thinking
of.
Yes,
he was also part of the Jose Cruz Jr. trade along with Mike Timlin.
So this kind of makes me, it harkens back to 90s Mariners days, trading for bullpen at the trade deadline. And the Boston trade hurt them pretty bad, but
yeah. Oh, you think two guys who were like key pieces of the Red Sox title teams, you think those would have been nice to have in Seattle?
This one, it's funny where we talk about the rankings for prospects, and Jonathan Clase from per MLB is the 10th ranked Mariners prospect. I think the Mariners had seen enough of Jonathan Clase, and they were like, he is going to be at best probably a fifth outfielder. They saw him as a quadruple A type player. They might be wrong about that.
I don't think you can decide that about somebody who's 22 and did hit pretty well in Tacoma. I do think they are optimistic. They are, you know, in making this move, not viewing him as a starting outfielder.
And that kind of has to be the case, because if they were viewing him, and that's kind of where it's funny about like these prospect rankings, like every team has a 10th best prospect. You know, at that point, you're getting down to the three. I mean, there's 30 MLB teams.
Correct.
So you're getting down to the 300th best prospect at some point. You know?
It depends how good your farm system is. But
Or it could be even worse, right? I mean, there could be teams with more than of the 10 best.
At this point, the Mariners farm system is above average in terms of depth. So maybe he's the 220th best prospect.
A little top heavy, though, the Mariners farm system. And there's kind of the like, there's the five or six or seven that you care a lot about. And then beyond that, it's kind of a crapshoot. So seeing Jonathan Klaase being involved in this, this one that excites me a little bit less, just because, again, you're trading hitting for pitching. There's two things that you don't do. In football, you don't trade defense for offense.
But you don't?
But you don't trade offense for defense.
Okay.
And in this one, you don't trade hitting for pitching because it's inconsistent, and trading for a prospect for somebody for a couple of months. So this is one where it's like, if this doesn't work out, at the same time, the Mariners know a lot more about Jonathan Klaase than we do, and their expectation for him, again, they might be wrong, but their expectation for him is not to be an everyday major leaguer.
Yeah, I would say, like, to me, it's prioritizing the top five prospects, and that after
there's
that,
no way that any of those players get traded outside of a.
I am not
Cole Young, Harry Ford, Colt Emerson, Montez, Celestin. Those players, obviously, the players that I don't even know if they can trade the players they drafted this year. Those players, it would take a mega trade for one of those players to go, and I'm not sure if Vlad or Luis Robert are worth it to the team.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. If you were planning to go get Luis Robert, going and trading for another outfielder would seem to make that a little bit less viable. But not that the DH position has been locked down in Seattle at this point.
I think Jazz Chisholm, to me, feels like the most obvious. Also, do you know how fun the Mariners would be?
I agree.
If they had Jazz Chisholm and Randy Arozarena and Julio, who I'm still willing to say that Julio is a fun baseball player.
Of course Julio is a fun baseball player.
I'm a little surprised you would say that Julio isn't the timeline overall.
It's not necessarily like a Julio sucks now take. It's just more like, I don't know that we can sit around and wait for Julio when the pitching is as good, starting pitching is as good as it is and as healthy as it is right now. So.
Who is actually good on the rotation? In the rotation, did you just view it overall,
like individually?
Yeah, individually. Because
I mean, they're all pretty similar to me. I think in terms of current value,
Kirby Castillo and Gilbert are like, I think they can go win games anywhere. And obviously, I love Brian Wu, but there's just not as much of a sample size.
Yeah, and not as much faith in him staying healthy.
But players who exceed those splits. Anyway, overall, this is the most exciting day that the Mariners have had since. I mean, they were up by 10 games. That was pretty exciting. This is the most exciting day that the Mariners have had since they made the playoffs. Since Cal Raleigh hit the homer, maybe
wow.
One of the playoff games. Coming back and beating the Blue Jays in that game. I mean, I was telling Kayleen yesterday. I was talking about the Mount Rushmore of games that you've been to. And I was like, the game that we were at where JP had the hit down the line, where we were sitting in the J-Rod squad, that was the best game of the year.
I mean, there was a post at some point in the Discord about the highest like championship probability leverage, and that JP Crawford hit was one of like the highest in Mariners history.
So, I mean, it's been a while. They spent a whole season being pretty good. The win streak also, I can't think of any specific moment that was like, wow, we've reached a certain high during the win streak last year, though.
Right.
The August that they had, this is up there with, I hate to compare it to another moment of a team doing something that where you brought in fresh, young energy, something that was exciting in this last week. I hate to compare it to that, but do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Breathing new life into a campaign. But that's kind of what this feels like with Randy or Serena.
I was toying around with I don't know what the hot takes will be next week. I was taking away with an election themed, it's the ballpark stupid, to discuss that park factor research, but I guess I've already used it now.
So I personally like tuning into the Mariners today before this trade. Coming off being swept by the Angels, I was like, I've watched every chance that I've had. I've watched basically every single Mariners game this year. I'm a nihilist, right? I love pain also. But now I'm like, is Arozarena playing today? Do we know?
I do not know that.
Okay. If he's playing, I'm like, this is the most excited I've been to watch the Mariners in so long. I mean, it's unfortunate that Julio isn't there, that this happened, you know, like, wow, Julio is hurt. But And I think it would have happened either way, irrelevant of the injury. But I'm excited about the idea of seeing a lineup with Julio and De Rosarena in it, because I think it's going to be very fun and may just be the beginning.
Well, on that note, we will be back next week to discuss what the Mariners do or not do before the trade deadline. There is try, but I guess maybe not in terms of trades. Maybe there is no try in that one.
We do it Wednesday night. The trade deadline's Wednesday, right?
No, the trade deadline's Tuesday, isn't it?
I thought it was the 31st.
No, it's the 30th now.
The 30th. Perfect. All right, we'll do it. We'll do it Tuesday night. It'll be basically the 1 year anniversary of the Huskies leaving the Big Ten as well.
Fuck it. We'll do it live. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Spicy foods.
Not that. It gets spicy food. I don't know why you're taking this out on me.
I'll never beat the never seen a horror film allegations. Al.
Don't want to beat him. You know what? I had another fucking basketball transactions related. No, it was updating old contract extensions the next night in my dream. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's a sickness. Although this morning, the dream I had was you and I were talking on a plane with Jan and maybe our late grandmother. And then the plane tried to land. And we were like, wait, why is it landing? And then it did the pull-up maneuver and then started crashing. And I definitely was like, well, it's been a good run. Like, I have no awareness when I'm in a dream that I'm in a dream. I think I am literally dying when the plane is crashing.
At least we died alongside each other. Tyus Jones was the pilot.
Another the horror story. Just no. We know what Roman Dunze is the pilot. All souls are perished.
Wait,
what? You saw that from the combine, right?
No, what?
They're like, if you were you were on a plane and it was crashing, what would happen? Or say, like, that's one of the questions he got asked. Hold on, I can look up this
quote. If you were on a plane and it was crashing, what would happen? And they wanted to be like, I'd take charge and know how to fly a plane?
Yeah, for some reason, Roman Dunze was asked if he could land a plane in an emergency. And he said, absolutely not. We are going down. All souls have perished.
He actually said that all souls have perished?
Yeah, which is an incredible line.
My favorite thing about it is speaking so poetically.
Have you watched Hard Knocks Offseason with the Giants?
No, I kind of want to.
It's like incredible access, including Roman Dunze, his interview with them.
They have his combine. Interview?
I mean, not the whole thing. Awesome? Yeah.
God, I love Roman Dunze. It's so funny. I could care
and then they
less
didn't
about,
draft him.
Any of the other Huskies. Wait, who did they draft?
Malik
a
Neighbors.
Running back? Oh, they're going to regret that one. Did they have Malik Neighbors interview also?
Yes. Yeah, they had Marvin Harrison Jr., then the quarterbacks. Like, it's incredible. And also, like, watching the 40-yard dashes, they're all talking about why am I blanking name now on the name? Brian Daboll is claiming that he could run a sub-740.
A sub-740?
Yeah, and they're all making fun of him for believing that. Like, it makes the combine working with a team seem like the most fun thing in the world.
It does seem pretty fun. Wait, what kind of 40 do you think you could run?
What did you say you ran?
I ran 100.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't running a 40. My 100 was pretty solid, though. Not going to lie.
I still have some questions about the timing. I'm going to need to hand time that one.
I think I could run a sub-540. Do you believe that?
I don't think so. I mean, that's better than a lot of like actual NFL players run, right?
Not that many. Jake Bobo.
Sam, I think they showed Sam Hartman, Notre Dame's quarterback, and he was like a 4.8.
Okay, maybe not a sub-5. I take that back. What is the offensive lineman territory?
I feel like maybe 5.5.
I think I am faster than many offensive linemen in the NFL.
All right, the slowest 40 time at last year's combine, or this is 2023, was Washington guard Henry Bainuvalu at 5.5.
I think I could beat Henry Bainuvalu in a race.
they were talking about what yard line Daboll would need to start from in order to be able to pass to beat Warren is the Texas wide receiver who set the record this year, broke John Ross's record, right?
He'd have to start at like the 5 yard line.
He was wondering if he could start 25 yards in and still win.
Oh, no way. No way he's winning 25 yards in.
There have been some 5'8s in past years by linemen.
So, I don't think I would. What is
Trey Adams also had the slowest in 2020, 5.6.
We coach him slow. faster college than Oregon somehow, but we coach him slow. Do you know what Rich Eisen usually runs?
Let me check that out. I know he is doing it in a full suit.
Do I have any time to train, or is it just like today?
Oh, we'll give you some time to train. He's around around 6 seconds.
6 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing it in 5.5 at least. Do we have a place in Mattawa to time this?
To mark off 40 yards? No, I don't think we do. You know I'm putting this all in, right?
Are you?
Yeah.
This is the whole podcast now. It's just us talking after the podcast.
It is. Rich Eisen is now 55.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely faster than a 55-year-old Rich Eisen. I have like a mild toe injury, so I'd want to recover from that.
Excuses.
I hurt myself playing kickball with children.
Rich Eisen, 2023 was up to a 6.2, so... He's been slowing down over the... He sped up for a period of time from a 6.877 when he first ran it down to a low of 5.94 in 2016.
I can't remember what I said my 100 was. I was fucking cooking, though.
I agree you were.
I raced a child this last weekend on the 400. He's, like, pretty fast. He, like, will win the 400 at the track meets. But, so, like, we're going and I'm, like, pacing myself. And he also was good enough to know to pace himself. And there was another kid. It was me. And it was Mateo started, but then he bailed because he's just not fast enough, especially for distance. So there was like one kid. Don't need to worry about that. And I was like saving enough in the tank. And then this is also with the toe injury. But and then we got to the end and I was like, God, I hope Jack doesn't just like turn it on and go really fast. And I was like, I had more than enough.
Good for
anyway,
you. Still out there beating children in races.
I definitely faster than a 7-year-old. So the fact that I was able to just get up there and race like a lap around the track pretty well. I also was doing it barefoot.
It is an Olympic year if we want to bring it back, the Carcino Olympics.
The Carcino Games?
Yeah.
I don't know how we would do that. Well, Mugu and Carlo were in town a couple weeks ago. We'll see. Maybe in Mattawa we can do it.
I don't think the heat there is going to be conducive to it.
We can do. There's not even a diving board in the pool. We could do lap racing.
Yeah.
I'm not a strong swimmer.
I'm ready.
Are you really?
I mean, not really, but I think I would win the races among this family.
Really?
Yeah.
Down and back in the pool?
Yeah.
You think you're the fastest?
I do.
Who do you think is your closest competition? Katie or Kayleen? I don't know why Ben isn't an option or me. I feel like
you just described yourself as not a strong swimmer. That's why you're not an option.
Well, you know we're racing now.
I'm well aware. Again, I just said I'm ready.
I remember the pool wasn't great for float ball, right? Isn't that what we determined? It has like kind of a weird area for float ball.
I suppose so. I don't remember that.
That'll be part of the Olympics. Luca's ready. Yeah, no, we're racing.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, post pod next week, we'll talk about who won. We'll be there, so.